from Le Makom Rina, and that is our, specifically our Avodas Hashem in one of the courses. We all know one of the cardinal, one of the principal, one of the main ways we relate to Hashem, of course, is through davening, through tefillah. And yet at the same time, it's a challenge, something which we'll address even right at the outset of the shiur. But just, again, to contextualize this, I know there was a lot of effort over the last week in the yeshiva to really re-energize and reinvigorate people's ability to commit and connect to davening. Therefore, I thought that it made sense to insert this shiur, which we usually have as part of the curriculum anyway, but specifically to do it this week, is to try to kind of piggyback on the efforts that a lot of people are being involved in. Had a great Shabbaton, I'm sure, in Sfat this past Shabbos, so that's a certain spiritual energy jolt that everyone got from their Shabbaton in Sfat. And therefore, I wanted to piggyback with today's topic. Now, I want to focus on the fact that, again, for those of you guys who were here earlier in the year, you may recall that we did have a share earlier in this series where we discussed, you could say, almost a more philosophical question that relates to davening, and that is, why do we have a fixed text? For those of you, again, we have people from the Southern Hemisphere who were recently here, and we have some guests, but those of us who've been together all year recall that we had a share where we discussed Tila from that angle. I'd like to focus today, however, as the title of the shiur implies, on something much more practical. And that is simply, what do, whether it's the Gemara, Chazal, Rishonim, Achronim, what have our greatest sages, our greatest thinkers over the centuries, what suggestions do they have? What suggestions can we glean from their writings? Advice can we take from them in order to hopefully improve our davening? And I think that this is necessary, and that's why I think the campaign that the yeshiva was going through the last week, or this shiur, my modest contribution to that campaign, I think it's so important because it requires us to be honest and aware of two things. The first is, as is mentioned really right at the outset on your source sheet, in sources number 1 and 2, you have two incredible comments, really profound, almost bracing comments from two different Rishonim that highlight, each in their own way, with very powerful metaphors, each one of them using incredible imagery, about the central and core importance of having kavana during davening. Now, what I mean to say is as follows. We know that it's always ideal, always preferred, to have kavana, to have intentionality, to have spiritual awareness when we do a mitzvah. If you shake a lulav and you're half distracted, you know, maybe technically you did it. If you were spacing out during the shofar, maybe you kind of heard it, but, you know, a lot of mitzvos can be done mechanically without really being involved, fully engaged. And it's obvious that there's something lacking. And yet, as you see in sources number 1 and 2, that's not the case when it comes to tefillah. By which I mean to say, it's much worse. Usually we think of there's an actual mitzvah, it stands on its own, but there'd be a cherry on top. There's an enhancement. It's better if we can infuse that with a degree of kavana. When it comes to the issue of tefillah, however, as the Chovos HaLevavos, source number 1, points out in a very famous imagery, if you have tefillah without kavana, it's like a guf below ruach. It's like a zombie. It's like a body without a soul. Right? That's not just missing a cherry on top. It's missing the whole essence of the matter. You've said the words. There's a body. But if there's no intentionality, if there's no kavana, if there's no awareness, if you're not there, if there's no presence. So, again, a body's worth something too. But a body without a soul, a body without a spirit, is obviously very, very flawed. And in source number 2, the Or Chor Chaim, another one of the Rishonim, gives a different, but also very, very powerful, I think, very close to home, mashal. And that is, he says, given the fact that tefillah is really a conversation, and as we refer to Hashem so often in davening, it's a conversation between a child and his or her parent. And therefore, says the Or Chor Chaim, if that would be the case, if you daven to Hashem without kavana, it's as if you have im bincha yidaber lecha v'lo milibo halo yichar lecha. If your child were speaking to you, asking for the most, it's so important, Dad, Mom, you need to give me this, I really, really need this, fill in the blank. And yet, can you imagine as a parent, listening to a child really beg and plead for something, and while they're begging and pleading, Like, chutzpah. You're asking for something, you claim it's important, maybe it really is important, and you're not even all there, you're distracted. You're texting someone, you're just spacing out while you ask me, you know. I mean, we can't even imagine it on a human level because it's so absurd. Who would do such a thing? And if they would, obviously a parent would be rightfully insulted. It's funny, I was talking about this once with a very prominent Rosh Hashiva, actually, who once mentioned, by analogy, that he says sometimes, you know, he doesn't live in the same place, his kids are married already. He says sometimes they call before Shabbos. He says they always call. But sometimes I could tell that they're really into the conversation. There's other times I could tell, even though we're having the conversation, they're probably on Amazon at the same time. Right? Like, people are real. But that doesn't make it good. Right? It's a little bit insulting. And that's one thing if it's just the every Shabbos I call to say good Shabbos, mom and dad kind of thing. But if it was really a meaningful, you really need something big from your parents, and you're on Amazon while you're on that call, you're texting, you're distracted, you're thinking about something else while you're talking to them about that. So these two images, each in their own way, highlight how important, just how important having the right kavana for davening is. And yet at the same time, given, it's ironic, but given how important it is, and yet the challenge that each of us, if we're being honest, and this is why I'm so proud of the yeshiva for having this campaign, because it'd be easier to pretend that everything's great and then we don't have to have a special campaign because we're yeshiva and we're so from and we're so good. Right, but then doesn't solve any problems. To be honest about the problem is not only healthy, it's actually nothing to be embarrassed about, at least in the sense that, as the Gemara says in source number 3, this is as old a problem as prayer itself. Says the Gemara, there are certain things that a person cannot get through the day without falling short on. There are certain things which are just ubiquitous. These are things that people have always struggled with and probably, unfortunately, always will. And one of those three examples is iyun tefillah, the ability to have kavana. Again, the examples that the Gemara gives in accompanying tefillah are also really quite striking. And again, show how, again, to me this is always one of the most attractive parts of Gemara, one of the most attractive parts of Judaism and Chazal, is that we're honest. We're real. We're not pretending. So says the Gemara, right? People struggle with having hirhurim, right? Thoughts about things that they shouldn't have think about. It's one thing that people can control their behavior, halavai, but to control their thoughts is much harder. Or, as the Gemara says, maybe the best example we can all relate to is, you can have your own source, and that is Lashon Hara, right? Can anyone say they could go, they never speak Lashon Hara, right? It's like always around us. So in a similar vein, says the Gemara, it didn't start with you, it didn't start with me, it didn't start nowadays. People have always struggled. You know, we can understand why in a very real sense, right? To talk to Hashem sounds very appealing, and it really is, but it's hard. How do you talk to someone who can't see, you can't feel, you can't hear, you can't touch? How do you talk to someone like that? That's what it means to have kavana, but that's hard. So given that as a background, I want to, instead of waxing philosophically about this, again, nothing, you know, I'm as into waxing philosophical as the next guy, but that's not really going to help anybody, at least not for now. And I don't want to just learn something with you. I'd like, if I can, to help you. And therefore, I want to suggest 10 or so, we'll see how many we can get through, 10 or so practical suggestions, which were either communicated in Mefarshim as suggestions, to be practical tips for tefillah, or things which I think we can glean from other sources indirectly, which will be practical tips for tefillah. And my hope is that if even one of these touches you, if even one of these can be, you feel like, you know what, I could do that, this is something that I could relate to, I could use that, then it's already worth it. I think if you really put your mind to it, more than one of these, maybe even all of them, will be really, oh yeah, no, that could work, I could do that. But even if one of them, because not everyone's the same, and that's okay, and that's what the Sefer Chassidim says in source number 4. Again, very, very important in being honest. Hakol lefi lev ha'adam. Right? Not everything's going to work for every person. Again, if you have an exact mitzvah in the Torah, keep Shabbos, keep kosher, so that's got to work for you. And if it doesn't, then you got to make yourself work. The Torah's not going to get fixed for you. You got to get fixed for the Torah. But something like this, where we're talking about practical suggestions, ways to get to, the common goal of doing well in davening That is not up to you or up to me. That's, we all have to aspire to that same common goal. But how we get there, what route we take, which device, which technique, which suggestion can help us in our davening, this one more than the other. So that really, hakol afilei v'adam, what might work for you might not work for you, and vice versa, and that's okay. Right? So far, so good? Excellent. Okay, so let's start with things which, again, I call them practical, but we'll start with things which are a little bit more attitudinal. Again, we'll get to some very practical things, like concrete, like what your body posture is when you're davening, or what you do before you daven, and that kind of, we're going to get to some very, very concrete things also. But let's start even with, because I think it really, it can, part of the Yeshua, part of the salvation, part of the success can come, even, honestly, I think, from before we start davening. That is the attitude with which we approach davening. So the first thing I want to mention is almost a preventative point, which is, I think sometimes, especially when we have a kind of campaign that the yeshivas had now, or individually, we come to a point where, you know, I really want to get better at davening, or this frankly could be about anything else. One of the things that we sometimes do is we shoot ourselves in the foot. Even before we get started, we've already kind of defeated ourselves. And that is why? Because very often, we have completely unrealistic and outsized goals. Somebody who's, you know, never been able to have like a really, really meaningful, serious, heartfelt Shimon Esrei his whole life is already committing to, you know, I don't know what, you know, all of a sudden now, you know, like, let's take some baby steps, right? Let's learn to walk before we can run. But it's a common mistake, right? We all do it. And it's not only, by the way, in the religion realm, and so not only in the Tila realm, right? This is how people make, you know, this is why people give up, you know, 3 days after they started a big diet. They give up 10 days after they started a big exercise routine. All sorts of things in life, because we have this humongous dream of what's going to be at the end of the road. This huge, incredible goal. It is a good goal. But it's not realistic where we are now. Instead of having more baby, more incremental steps. And this is an insight, again, you don't need a source for this, because I think it's common sense, but it's a beautiful source, source number five, from the Michtav Me'Eliyahu. The Michtav Me'Eliyahu is Eliyahu Dessler. He was one of the great thinkers. He was originally from Kelim. Then for many years he was in England. And then eventually, in the second part of the 20th century, he made his way to Eretz Yisrael, where he was in the Panovich Yeshiva. And he has a classic work of kind of mashava, philosophy, hashkafa, musar, called the Michta Me'Eliyahu. And he says as follows, V'chein amar hal'iyun b'madrigot ramot, kigon madrigot ha. People have these huge goals. They want to get to these massive madrigals, to get this huge level, like they see the great heroes of our history, whether it's the Avos or Rishonim, Achronim, etc. Says of Dessler, second line, source number five, the Emet, Ein kol zaroi lanu, lefi madrigas lanu anu. This is not where we're holding. Who do you think you are? Tzrichim la'avod al ha-madriga ha-krova lanu. I've said this in some of our previous shurim, and it's a good opportunity to repeat it because it's so important. There's nothing more important, and frankly so rare, as having accurate self-awareness. Sounds very simple. It's not nearly as hard as, you know, advanced chemistry or calculus or physics. But trust me, a lot of really, really smart people are really stupid at this. To actually have an accurate, realistic self-awareness. Who am I? Not who I pretend to be, not what's my pose, not what do I show my parents, what do I show my friends, who am I really, where am I now? Once you have that, says Rav Dessler, you know what your goal should be? One step ahead, and then one step ahead. We call it a madrega, so we translate our madrega as a level, but it's also like a level, like on a ladder, right? The Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, right, if you try to skip a rung on the ladder, it's a good chance you're going to fall. One step at a time. Now, I would add, he doesn't say this explicitly here, but I would add, it's not terrible to have some long-term goal, to have a vision of what you really hope eventually to get to. But that has to be kind of put away once you have it. The more concrete thing has to be, you know what? Let me work on one part of davening. Or if I'm really good at one, okay, let's take shachris now. I'll worry about mincha and ma'ariv another time. Or maybe that's too big. I'm just going to take the first brachos of Shemon Esrei. I'm just going to take the Shema. I'm just take bite-sized steps and then be successful at those. eventually one thing will lead to another. I think I may have mentioned this in a previous year. If not, we'll probably mention it in a future year. One of the best books I've read in the last few years, which is a massive, massive bestseller for a nonfiction. It's beyond, I think it's over 10 million copies at this point. It's called Atomic Habits. Very, very powerful book. So we're not talking about habits per se here, but he makes exactly the same point as Rav Dessler. Exactly the same point as Rav Dessler. Right? Small things, 1% growth every day. Once you get in the habit of growing even a little bit, that it changes your whole mentality. Before you know it, you're doing great, great things. But train yourself in small victories. Okay, that's number one. So you can look at this in a very positive way, or even a more realistic way. You've lost before you started. If your goal is right, whoever you imagine is like the best davener ever. I think I may have mentioned the story to you, maybe one of the earlier shiurim. When I came back 13 years ago on a sabbatical, before we eventually made Aliyah, so I took my sabbatical, I was learning in yeshiva. And that year, with my wife's permission, I left the family for Yom Kippur, and I came to yeshiva as a married man, but you know, my wife was home with the kids, and I came here for Yom Kippur. Rav Aaron was still alive, Rav Amital was still alive, it was actually the last year of Amital Davin for the Omid for the yeshiva, which was quite meaningful and memorable. And because they were still alive, so Rav Moshe sat towards the back. He sat at the table parallel to where Rav Mordechai sits now. And that table was basically empty because everyone was too scared to sit there. So when I came for my sabbatical, I think it was a Tarragon or someone else said, do you mind sitting at this table? I'm like, do I mind? I get a whole year just to sit and talk between Rav Moshe and Mordechai. The whole son, what could be better? Anyway, so I told the Gabayim, I'm coming for Yom Kippur. You know, as you know, they take out all the tables and stuff. They gave me not only a seat, they gave me a shtender. And I wasn't even on the faculty yet. I was just like I'd taken a sabbatical learning here. But I got a shtender. And they put it right next to Rav Moshe's. Now, if any of you remember, or any of you, I mean, even on a weekly basis, but certainly if any of you saw him on Rosh Hashanah Kippur to the front, he davens like, it's not just that he's an angel, he's a fiery angel. I mean, he is like unbelievably passionate in his davening. It's just like, I'd never see anything like that in my life. Right? It's incredible. It's really, really incredible. But if I would have said to myself, you know, okay, that's it. Tomorrow, every mincha, like Rav Moshe's, come on. I can barely concentrate for half a davening on a weekday. All of a sudden, I'm going to be, honest self-assessment. Who am I? Concrete goals, you'll get there. Number one. Number two, this is also incredibly important, and it's really very connected. It's the flip side or a connected attitudinal point. And again, not unique to tefillah, but here you have the Kaf HaChayim, applying this, one of the great Sephardi poskim, applying it specifically to tefillah. Why is it? This is not my insight, it's very well known, but why is it that so many people, although I'm an expert at failing at diets, I'm a worldwide expert, you can't find anyone who's failed more diets than me, but why do people like me typically fail at something like that? So as often as the saying goes, it's not that first Oreo or piece of cake or brownie that you know you're not supposed to have. That's not why you failed. It's what happens once you have the first brownie or the first Oreo. You tell yourself, well, I shouldn't have done that. I'm a loser. I shouldn't have done that. I know I wasn't supposed to do that. Well, now, and before you know it, I might as well have the whole box of Oreos. This is my Simba Chol Yom. Everyone knows this who's ever struggled with dieting. And it could be an example of any other things. I was supposed to do exercising one day. I missed it one day. Well, once I missed it one day, whatever I was supposed to do for the week anyway, I'm not going to get to, so I might as well not go at all. This is very, very common. So says the Kaf HaChayim in source number 6. People do the same thing when it comes to davening. How so? And he gives an unbelievable analogy. Mi she'ne'anas uba lo machshava be'eza bracha bibracha shmon esrei lo yasiach daito min ashar lo shekivein ba'achas. What happens? People, you start off, especially now, it's in the front of our mind, we're working on it, bracha to Hashem in the beginning, you're all into it. And at some point, it could be the first bracha, the second bracha, it could be the seventh bracha, at some point, you realize, I've been paying attention for a while. Right? We know Shimon Esrei so well. Our minds can go around the globe and back, and we're just blah, 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 blah. The last thing you remember saying was Atachone, Nayan Ritzei. And I'm sure in 99% of the time you actually did say every word. Sometimes people skip words, but even if you said every word, but you were gone. What happens when you see space out? Then you space back in. Right? Raise your hand if you have no idea what I'm talking about. Okay, we have an honest crowd. That's good. Right? Everyone's done this. Like, every day. I recall, again, maybe I've told you the story. I remember, I tell the story when it happened. I was walking down Ben Yehuda. No. Well, you just got here. Right, I didn't tell it last week. That's true. And I was walking down Ben Yehuda, minding my own business, when all of a sudden someone punched me in the chest. It's terrible. And then I realized I was actually in shul saying Shemon Esrei, and I had spaced out, and I was doing this. I was hitting myself. Okay? Now, you space back in. Now, of course, that's not the embarrassing thing. The embarrassing thing is when that happens on Friday night. Oh, who hasn't done that? And then it's like, I talk to, you know, Yismach Moshe, right, okay? So now you're back in. So what do people say? Says the Kaf HaChaim. This is not me. This is the Kaf HaChaim. Well, I obviously missed already bracha X, Y, and Z. Fafalin. Spilled milk. I'll get him tomorrow. But this Shemon Esrei is done. Obviously, I can't do it. You know how foolish that says the Kaf HaChaim? It would be analogous to, this is what he says on the next line. It's analogous to, Dome Lemi, She'ibed Margolios Achas. You are a courier. And somebody gave you a bag of uncut diamonds. Says you need to get from here to the retail office. There's 100 diamonds in here. Each one's worth thousands of dollars. Do not lose one. Says the Kaf HaChaim, you'd be so careful, right? Every 100 yards you're checking. Now what happens if a third, halfway through, you check, and you don't know what happened? You can't believe it. You're trying so hard. This is, well, you're not from Antwerp, but Vienna, you're close enough. Right, Europeans, they love their diamonds. Okay, good. All of a sudden you realize a third of the way through, halfway through, there's a little hole in the bag. And you count, 99 diamonds, 98 diamonds. Now, would it make, it's terrible. It's really very terrible. But would it make any sense? Or as he says, Hayala aladat, would it dawn on anyone? Say, well, since I already lost, and he told me not to lose any. And since I lost one, forget it. Throw the whole thing in the garbage. Go get them tomorrow. It's absurd. Because you lost the one, you're going to throw away the rest? Now, in that example, which is not my mashal, that's the Kaf HaChaim, it's patently absurd. Can someone tell me what's the difference between that and what we all do during Shemon Esrei? We do the same thing. Because we realize we didn't do a good job, one bracha, two brachas, whatever, it's okay, forget it, I won't do good on anything else. I'll worry about it the next day. That's a huge mistake. Let's say you had one of those moments like we all tend to have, where you zoom out. Now, sometimes you don't zoom back in until you're already taking 3 steps back. And then you have no choice but to wait for the next day. But sometimes we zoom back in and we're still in the game. We got a few brachas left. So it's true. It's okay to be disappointed. But don't let that disappointment sabotage you. You still got whatever number of brachas left. Get back in the game. Half a loaf is better than none. So again, that's an attitudinal point, but I think many of us, consciously or subconsciously, are guilty of the exact mistake that the Kaf HaChaim is talking about. And even though it sounds ridiculous, let's be honest, some of us are ridiculous. And we do exactly the thing that he's describing. Number three, source number seven, Rav Kook, again, attitudinal, but very, very important. We're going to do two more attitudinal ones, and then the rest are going to be mamash concrete. Says Rav Kook, at source number seven, what is the problem he thinks that is maybe the core issue that holds people back from davening? A lack of emunah. But what don't they believe in, says Rav Kook? Not that they don't believe in Hashem. God forbid. Not that they don't believe that there could be such a thing called tefillah. We don't believe in our own worthiness. Hashem would listen to me? Hashem cares. I have to say, me, little me. My request, my tefillah, that might change Hashem's mind. He cares what I have to say. What you talking about? Why would he? We have a no emuna, says Rav Kook. Mir ha emuna betfilaso. Not that we don't believe in God, but rather, dakaot libo mirov avonotav. After all, we all know our own mistakes. We know our flaws. We know our limitations. Right? And a lot of people, I've absolutely seen this. I've had people admit it to me. Who knows what happened the night before? Now that same person is, I'm going to talk to Hashem 7 hours later, 5 hours later. Me who did or didn't do X or Y last night. Now I'm going to talk to Hashem today. I'm putting on tefillin today. The same hands that did this, the same mouth that said that. But it's a mistake, says Rav Kook. Again, he's not whitewashing your mistakes. We have to do tshuva. We have to be honest when we make mistakes. But it has nothing to do with whether... Right? And again, he doesn't mention this, but I will mention this. I have the privilege, I'm very proud to be a part of the sandwich generation. I'm both a son and a father. And b'sha'ah tova, I hope in a few months I'll be a grandfather. My oldest daughter is expecting our first grandchild. Mirtz Hashem. Thank you. Keep on davening. You can include a healthy baby for us, we'd be thrilled. So I can tell you, as someone who's both a child, but also as a parent, even if your child lets you down, even if they disappoint you, it doesn't dawn on you as a parent that you don't want them to talk to you anymore. Right? It's immature. Yeah, it's human, we understand that, but it's not, just because it's human doesn't mean it's good. Right? So says Rav Kook, just because you know your own limitations, you know your own faults, okay, so work on them. But don't let that hold you back. Hashem still wants to talk to you. Hashem still wants to hear from you. Believe in yourself. Okay, that's number three. Number four, the last one of attitudinal, and that is something which is maybe the most basic, you could say, that is we have to appreciate the privilege that is davening. Right now, I know for many people, for many adults, for many teenagers, right, davening is anything but a privilege. For many people, they feel like it's a burden. They have to do it. Again, this can be very true, especially for teenage boys or for men. I've got to go to minyan and shul and got to wake up on time. I'm not saying it's not easy. It's always easy. Whoever said that? But not very few things that are actually genuinely valuable in life are easy. And I agree with you that tefillah would not be an example of that. Tefillah is not easy. We're right on record as admitting that. What a privilege. It's unbelievable. Take a look at, the Gemara says in source number 8, in general about davening, how it has to become mitoch simcha shel mitzvah. Now what does that mean to be happy when you daven? It doesn't mean that you have to be a Karbach guy. And you have to always be, you know, na-na-naching and jumping on the tray, or for that matter, moving to tzvat, etc. Again, if it works for you, great. But that's not what it really means. At least not, it's not only what it means. But rather, as Mesillas Yesharim explains in source number 9, what it means is you come from a place of privilege. A privilege, as you all know, better even than me, right? In your generation, privilege has become a dirty word, right? But it's horrible. Don't get me into politics now. That's not the purpose of this year, obviously. But it's a horrible, it's one of the many, many things wrong at the moment in our broken civilization, Western civilization, right? We should have gratitude for the things we've been given, not to be embarrassed by them or feel guilty by them. But yes, of course, You know what our greatest privilege is? Not our gender, not our race. Our greatest privilege is we are given an opportunity to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem wants to hear our tefillah. Says the Mesillas Yesharim, source number 9. Kshetia omei lefanai, litpalel, yalibcha sameach alecha, sh'ata mispalel el Elokim. Do you know how lucky you are? It's unbelievable. The melech malchei hamlochim actually is interested in hearing what you have to say. Now, that doesn't guarantee he's going to give you everything you want. It's not a movie. It's not a children's book. Sometimes the answer will be no. But you have direct access. We actually, the Rambam talks about this as one of the 13 principles of faith. We believe in this as, you don't even need mediated tefillah. You don't have to go to the priest or go to the Rebbe, Lahavdil, to daven for you. Maybe there's some place for that in Judaism. Maybe. But the default is, no, you get to talk to Hashem. You don't need me, you don't need my help. You don't need the rabbi's help. You, Hashem, wants to talk to you. So is it hard? Yes, sometimes, of course, it's hard. It's hard to get up, and you have other things you want to do, and it's hard to concentrate. We're being honest about all that. But if we take a moment and say, what? How lucky am I? It's incredible. It's really incredible. Right? Every one of us have access. Right? It's the most important thing. You take anyone in the world of business, or as somebody, for example, I made Aliyah only 13 years ago, right? And I'm as American and, you know, non-Israeli as you can imagine, right? I don't have connections in the government. My kids would need something, or if I needed something, in Israel, everything's about, you know, the word, you're familiar already with the word, protexia? Right? I don't got any protexia. One of my children right now, who's drafting in a few weeks into the army, but because of his situation, he might not get a unit that he's particularly excited by. What he could really use more than anything is a father who had protexia. But I don't have it. I can't help him in that regard. Right? But guess what? With even more important than the government, even more important than some general in the army, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we all have protexia. You don't even need someone else's. You have your own. You're a Ben Avram Avinu. Hashem wants to talk to you. Hashem wants to hear from you. If we actually had that attitude, if we actually really, really believe that and internalize that, we would be davening every day. Mitoch Simcha Shel Mitzvah. How lucky are we? We get access. Not ever, how many people get that? Okay? So those are a few suggestions right off the top, which are purely attitudinal. Any questions on these, what we've seen so far? I assume that that's a positive, passionate silence. Okay, fantastic. I'm not sure though, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. Okay, number five, bottom of the page, source number 10. This is based on sources before him, but I gave you the Rambam as just a good source for the point. That is our first practical suggestion of the day. Says the Rambam, and again, the context here is beautiful, is so important. Again, you know, in Morning Seder, right, your Bayim always focusing on not just what did the Rambam say, for example, but where did he say it? Where did the Rambam place a certain halacha? So here says the Rambam in source number 10, Ketzad hi hakavana. This is the Rambam speaking about kavana. And among other things that the Rambam says, in the context of kavana, where it's underlined, Lefichach tzarech leishek ma'at kodem ha'tfilah, that is to say, says the Rambam, based on previous earlier sources than him, another incredibly important piece of advice, and here's our very practical one, this is not an attitudinal one. You don't have to be a philosopher to do this. And that is, you need a little hachana. I can tell you that this is something that I fail at miserably. So it's not that this is one of the ones that doesn't speak to me, it's just that I haven't figured out how to master it yet. But I think if I did, it would help me a lot. Right? I am typically running into davening. It's actually astounding because I'm the rabbi of the shul. And, at the moment at least, the shul is literally next door to my house. So I have like zero excuse to be late. And it's not that I'm necessarily late, but I know that I'm a 15-second walk to shul. So I leave my house 15 seconds before the minyan I go to for Shachar, the minyan I go for Mincha, and the minyan I go for Marv. But the truth is, what I really should do is what the Rambam said. Now, there's a famous Mishnah in Brachos, some of you may be familiar with it, of course, but Chassidim HaRishonim, they would take like an hour before davening to meditate, and this is like the whole Hisbodidus and Rabbi Nachman, and welcome to Tzfat. Did you guys go into a cave and do Hisbodidus?
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so that, I'm not even being mazalzlin, Chas V'Shalom. But it's not the kind of thing that most of us are going to do on a regular basis. Let's just, can we at least accept that as a statement of fact? Whether we should or we shouldn't, but we're not. But we don't need an hour. You don't need to be in a cave. You just don't need to be in Tzvat. If we just came a minute before davening, a minute before mincha, a minute before you had to rush and put on the tefillin and get ready with brachos, and just sat down and thought, clear your head, clear your mind. I'm about to daven. About to talk to Hashem. And maybe even, I would even suggest, and not that I'm doing any of these things myself, I'm being honest with you, but I wish I was. But you know, I got X coming up today, or I got these things coming up this week. This is what, give yourself even one or two things to anchor your thoughts, to focus on. It's a game changer. Kavana is so hard, which we know is the premise of the whole shiur. Why would we possibly think that without any preparation we could figure that out on the fly? While I'm saying all the words, of which I don't understand half of them, something we're going to get to in a minute. That's all, and also I'm going to get it covered. Most things, again, I don't know what you do for, you know, what you hope to do for a living, what you have parents who do for a living, or even what you were like in high school. But I know almost in most fields, if someone has something big coming up, they don't just, you know, at least, you know, the unsuccessful people wing it. But successful people in every field, they prepare. And sometimes a lot more than a minute, right? Even if they've been doing the same surgery 100 times, right? You're not interested in a doctor who's winging it, right? They prepare, right? It doesn't have to be, you know, a trial attorney, a businessman, certainly a rabbi. You prepare. You think about it for a second. What am I? Again, I can tell you something. I do this all the time when I have to make a big phone call or I'm about to have an important meeting. I will sometimes literally write notes even. These are the points I want to make sure I say. If it's really important, I'll even formulate my thoughts. I want to say in this these words. So think about if we could do that for our davening. I think that would be a game changer. Turn over the page. Source number 12. We'll skip 6 if anyone wants to look at it inside. It's a very, very powerful approach to why Hachana is so important, preparation. But let's skip that in purpose of time. Source number 12 and 13 are very related to the issue of preparation, but not exactly the same thing. And that is, says the Shulchan Aruch, source number 12, based on the sugya in Brachos, Yikanes Shur Shnei Ptachim V'Achrach Yipalel. So this is a sugya in the Gemara, which the Shulchan Aruch brings down, which sounds like it's saying, but we'll see in a moment that's not what it's saying, but it sounds like it's saying, don't daven in the back. Now, there are some people who always want to be in the back of the class. Some people always want to be in the back of the shul. Right? Often, not always, but often it symbolizes a lack of engagement. Right? You want to hide in the back. Right? But that might be, if that's true, then that's something to keep in mind. But that's not even what really the Gemara means. As the Shulchan Aruch says, where it's underlined, V'yesh Mefarshim, what does it mean? Shlo yimaher litpalel miyad kishenichnas. It's not talking about someone who like came and like just, you know, that's where his makom kavu is, they sat in the back. Whether that's a good place to sit or not, you should sit in the bleachers, you should sit front in the base medrash. Where you should sit is a different issue. But says the Shulchan Aruch, what the Gemara is really referring to is, obviously the image here is where the door and the entrance is the back of the shul. Don't come in, and the second you come in, start davening. Okay, now it sounds like it's just talking about Hachana, but take a look at the Mishnah Berurah, source number 13. What should you do rather? Kadesh yit yashev da'ato alav yipalel b'kavanam. Because if you do it, take up a kinisato, pitom ein da'ato miyushev asalav. Now what I think it's referring to is, we have to remove distractions. Right? Now, they didn't have cell phones. But clearly, this would be an obvious example in our generation, right? If they're talking about, well, it's distracting if you're kind of by the door or you start davening right before. Now, that could still be relevant nowadays, too. But there are also some other things that we could think about. And that is that we need to be at our best, right? It's hard. It's hard enough as it is. But if we're doing all sorts of things at the same time, much, much more difficult. So I would say this, you know, again, I don't mean, I'm not trying to make anyone uncomfortable, I'm not going to offend anybody, I'm just throwing you that as suggestions based on my own experience. I think there's at least two things I can think of which are common issues, right? One is, a lot of times, and again, this is certainly true for adults as much as it is for teenagers, people like to sit near their friends. Now, if you think about it, it only makes sense if you have one goal in mind. And that is to talk to the friend a little more than talking to Hashem. If the goal is to talk to Hashem, it might be okay to sit next to your friends, but it's not necessary. It may even be counterproductive. So I'm not saying, don't misunderstand me, I'm not saying you should dafka not sit next to friends. I think it depends on knowing yourself and what kind of friends you have. But if, and I've seen this many times, there are people who want to daven, but the people near them are talking either to each other or to them. It's just not a conducive location. So you have two choices. You can either be that guy, and no one wants to be that guy. Shh, can you please stop? I don't think there's anything wrong, especially if you're not trying to embarrass somebody. Like, I think it's like a horrible thing that the guy who's trying to daven is the bad guy. You offended me, you embarrassed me. I'm trying to daven, we're in shul, did you not notice? And you don't stop talking, and I'm the bad guy because I want to concentrate? Again, could you actually embarrass someone? Of course you could, that would be wrong. But even if you had the gumption, which most people don't, to ask somebody nicely to please stop talking or to lower their voice or take it outside because you're, after all, just doing that horrible thing like trying to daven in a shul at mincha time. How dare I? But the easiest solution is to move your own seat. Now, I'm not letting them win, right? I also think people are very stubborn about these things. It's a mistake. Move your seat. It's a distraction. Where you daven, in that sense, is very important, as the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch just told us. But the second thing, which I was already alluded to, but I think we should be honest about, is a cell phone never helped anyone really daven. Let's be honest. Okay? Now, I mean that in two regards, the more obvious and the less obvious one. Checking your cell phone during davening is probably halachically problematic, but it is certainly not conducive to kavanah. Like, no one really needs me to tell you that. You all know the truth. So I just have to be honest. I would also add, even though this is not the topic of the shiur, what are we saying about ourselves if we can't go 10 minutes or even 35 minutes at a shacharis without our phones? Are we that addicted? Now, unfortunately, the sad answer is for many of us, yes. But if that's the case, then we have, I wouldn't say bigger problems, but we don't just have davening problems. We've got other problems too. So at minimum, the 3 times a day we're davening, if we really make them a phone-free zone, in addition to helping our daven, there'll be a side benefit. We've created pockets, which we very rarely do otherwise, of having a little phone-free existence, which is probably healthy for us on many levels. But our purpose tonight and the agenda of our shir is, it would clearly also be helpful for our davening, right? I don't know about you, but for me, when the phone is around and out, I'm tempted to do what more than one of you, I'm not trying to call anyone out here, but just in case you think I don't notice when you're looking down at your lap or other such things, but more than one of you have done more than a few times in today's shir. Right? If it's around and a thought pops, we are all trained, and I'm just as guilty as anybody. A thought pops into our head, and we have no impulse control. We need to text it right away. Probably it could wait. Just saying. Probably you're not a general, and there's not like, you know, an army about to, you know, or some big deal that if you don't respond right now, the whole thing falls apart. It could happen. But, guys, you're 18. What emergencies exactly are going on in your life? And I'm much older than you, and there aren't that many emergencies in my life, not regularly. So if it's around, we're likely to use it. We're likely to check it. It's the hardest thing ever in 2023 to see your phone go zzz and not check. I mean, I'm not a machadish on this. There have been massive studies already. I can't even imagine what the long-term studies are going to be in a few years, in a few decades, about what this whole technology has done to our brains and our impulse control, right? But like the whole phantom ring and the, you know, people touching the pocket always, and a lot. Again, it's clear that it's going to come out in the psychological studies. So the answer is don't have the phone near you. And I'll add, by the way, this is why, again, I don't mean to insult anybody, especially since many of you might be doing this in 10 minutes from Arv. But I'm just giving a suggestion. It's not a criticism, it's a suggestion. Don't misunderstand me. I'm a very big fan of not davening from your phone. I'm not saying anything halachically wrong with davening from your phone, but I think it's a major mistake. I'm not talking about if you have no other sitter. If you're in a place where there's no sitter and you don't know davening by heart, so yes, davening with your phone is better than not davening. But in general, I know many people in my own shul, literally 10 steps over there is the bookcase, like you get a sitter. But they daven out of their phone. So why do I think it's such a mistake? For the 2 reasons I just mentioned. Number one is, it's a perfect opportunity to wean yourself off your phone even for a little bit. You're doing yourself a disservice by not taking a break from the phone. But from a davening perspective, it's also a mistake. I know myself, when I have had, a lot of times I have to daven from my phone. If I'm in places, like for example, when I travel, like I often don't even bring a sitter with me because I'm, you know, but I travel from Israel to America, so I have to have a big bag. But once I travel domestically, even to Canada, but anywhere within North America, I travel with carry-on. I don't travel with anything under the plane. So sometimes I travel for 3 or 4 days at a time, it's not a big deal. But like for example, when I went on my trip in December for the yeshiva, I think I was in like 7 cities in 9 days. I didn't sleep in the same bed twice. And everything was with a carry-on bag and one little roller. So I had to get everything, and I couldn't even fit a sitter. So yes, for that week, I davened out of my phone. But I can tell you, when you're davening with your phone, and all of a sudden you get a text, or an alert, or from, you know, whatever, from whatever ESPN, or whatever it is you follow, I'm just going to assume for now it's ESPN, that's probably the best case scenario, right? It's very tempting to look at it during davening. Like, are we going to be honest, or are we going to lie to ourselves? So what's the upside of davening from your phone? So if you want to know what I think, those are 2 important things. Where we daven, location-wise, not, you know, sometimes davening next to the person you sit next to is an enhancement of our davening. The person you daven next to doesn't have to be Ramosha Lichtenstein, it could be somebody else. But someone who really is into davening, that's a great thing to daven next to that person. But if the people we're davening next to are not helping us, I think we should find another place to daven. And number 2 is not with our phones. I think those are examples of this broader point that the Shulchan Aruch is making to avoid distractions. Next, number 7, sources 14 and 15. Again, a Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah. And this is the issue of Makom Kavua, says a Shulchan Aruch, source number 14. Yikave Makom Litfilaso. Now, why is it important to have a Makom Kavua? So the answer is not the reason that most people like having their own seat. Right? Now, I think, again, I know, at least, you know, because in addition to being in the yeshiva, I also have a shul. and I'm not only speaking of my own shul and the shul I used to be rabbi of before I met Aliyah, I think in general this is more of an issue for men than for women, and certainly more for adults than for kids. But a lot of men like having their makom kavua. They take it very, very seriously. But most of the people I know who are very into their makom kavua ain't got nothing to do with what it says in Shulchan Aruch Mishnah Berurah. Right? It's a kind of a territorial thing. Got my space. You know, men like their space. And especially if they got a few friends who always sit in the same area, they want to be there. But just the feeling of belonging, like I'm not a stranger, I got a space. Right? Funny, that's not exactly what it says in Mishnah Berurah. There's a reason to have a makom kavua, but that's not it. Look what says in Mishnah Berurah, source number 15. First of all, where do we know this from? So it's interesting, it comes from Avram Avinu. Shekein Avram Avinu, Shekava Makom L'Tfiloso, Kedesiv Yashka Avram Aboker, El HaMakom, Asher Amad Sham. Right, we always talk about that famous pasuk about how Avram woke up early in the morning with alacrity, he davened, he teaches us about davening Shachris and getting up early, but the pasuk also says he had a place, I don't know where it was, in the desert, in his tent, wherever it was, he had a place that he used to daven it regularly. So we learn from there that a person should daven. And as Mishnah Berurah, something fascinating, Gam Kishim Mispalel Bebeso, Yikava Makom Shol Yibilbalu B'nei Habayis. Very interesting. And this is how you know that what the Mishnah Berurah and the Shulchan Aruch are talking about are not that psychological need that most people have, and many men especially, that they want their territory. Because says the Mishnah Berurah, it's even if you daven at home. Again, we're not discussing now when it's appropriate to daven at home, when don't you have to daven with a minyan. But even if, and legitimately so, maybe there could be a legitimate reason. We have any different legitimate reason why a person doesn't go to shul. Right? So you still have to daven. So you daven at home. So you would have, one might have thought that makom kavua is not relevant. I have to be in the exact same place in the den every time. Says the Mishnah Berurah, you should be. Why? So the Mishnah Berurah says it in one way, I'll say it in a slightly different way. The Mishnah Berurah says, if you have a place, now he's assuming that you're not going to pick right in the middle of the kitchen where all the kids are, you know, all your siblings or everyone else is going to school, like getting ready, right? You pick a place that's ordinarily quiet. But I think it's also more than that. I think there's a more subtle point, which is, I think, in line with a lot of the things that we've been talking about, which is, davening is hard. And a lot of what I think we're very aware of now in modern psychology is that we have triggers. I'm not discussing the stupidity of microaggressions and all the other stuff that you'll have to deal with when you go to college campuses and all this other stuff. Right, and that people get offended and you did something terrible because you triggered me. I'm not going there at all. But the premise that A, even subconsciously, can induce feeling B, that's for sure true. Now whether that we should like turn society upside down, for that's a different story. I'm not getting into that, although you may have guessed where I fall on that question. But when it comes to davening, it's a real point. This is I think what the Shulchan Aruch is really getting at, what the Gemara is really getting at. Which is, if you have a place that you always daven in, then what's going to happen when you go there? Subconsciously, you're already in the game. Your mind's already being subconsciously triggered. This is a davening space. Right? If each time you daven, you're in another place, it doesn't mean you couldn't daven with Kavana, but you don't start off with that advantage. I'm not saying it's the biggest advantage. You didn't steal home. But you start in like 2 or 3 yards ahead of everybody else, or ahead of where you would have been. It's not a competition. If you're starting a few yards ahead of where you would otherwise be, if you start off in a place where subconsciously already know this is my davening place, you're ready. It's kind of like the same way hachana helps, the way preparation helps. Right? You're in a groove already. Because I associate, right? We make association. I know this is very significant for me. Right? Song, right? Tunes. I remember a few years ago, we were in a Pesach hotel, and since I spent most of the time eating, the little bit of time that I could tear myself away from the buffet, so I was doing a lot of running on the treadmill. There was a particular song that was new that year, and I was really, really into it. And as my kids will tell you, they make fun of me, my wife makes fun of me. When I find something on the menu, like at a certain restaurant, every time I go to that restaurant, I'll order the same thing. I'm not experimental. I'm not wild and crazy. I can't take a chance. If I found something's good, I'm going with that. That's my personality. It's got Milas and it's got Castronos, but it's who I am. And as I'm getting older, it's getting worse, for sure. It's the same thing with music. I'll get into a song and my kids will know, okay, that's Abba's, it's on repeat. He's on that Spotify thing. He's got it, it's on repeat over and over again. So happens to me, it's not a bad song, but at some point, a week, 2, 3 weeks later, like I moved on to a different song. Years later now, whenever I hear that song, my mind immediately goes to that Pesach hotel, that city and that treadmill. Right? We make associations. So I think a makom kavua is a way of association. And if we can create a relationship with that place, then each time we go through it, it triggers us. Oh, get into the davening mode. Okay? So far, so good? Another one. Source 16. Very practical. Says Aruch HaShulchan. Two opinions, but I think this is worth pointing out. Very important. Two opinions. Says Aruch HaShulchan. Yesh mitpa'alim mitocha sidr. Kedesh yichav in yoter. Others say, no, it's better to have eyes closed. So I'm using this to make the following point. Think about what works best for you. Don't be lackadaisical about it or non-intentional. Be intentional. For some of you, doubt, and I think probably for most, if I was going to guess, if we're really being honest, over the long term, if we daven from a sitter, it'll be better. But for other people, davening with your eyes closed and really allows you to get away the distractions and really concentrate. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, which one's right? Whichever one works for you. We have, I know the guys in South Africa don't really like basketball, but for the rest of us, what is the best, what is the right way to take a foul shot? Anyone know what's the right way to take a foul shot?
Whatever works.
Or said differently, but I agree with you, the same way every time. That's the answer. Find something that works for you. If each time you get to the foul line, you're trying to come up with a new way, you're done. Right? Find something that works. The same thing here. Figure out. Trial and error is fine. Figure out what works. Are you a sitter open guy? Are you an eyes closed guy? That's point number one. But point number two is, here's the key point, gentlemen. There are only two options, not three. What's the third and most common option you'll see in a shul? Right? You're not in the sitter, and you're not with the eyes closed. You're wandering. Now, it's obvious, again, I'm not here to judge anybody, but it's obvious that that's not the best way. Right? That reminds us of what? The second source we started with. The kid who's having a conversation with his or her parents, begging for their life while they're distracted. Right? This is not going to be an effective thing. Right? You're going into the bank asking for this mortgage, which is going to or this big loan, which is going to save your business, while you're checking ESPN. I mean, it's absurd. And yet we do this every day. So just like you wouldn't be on your phone while you were talking to somebody important, you wouldn't be staring around, right? I want you to know, I'm talking to you, by the way. I want you to know you mean the world to me, and I hope we can spend the rest of our lives together. Will you marry me? What are the odds you're going to say yes? Right? Not unless you're a loser. Don't be a loser. Say no. If someone asks you to marry you that way, say no. Right? If they can't even look you in the eye, they can't concentrate. So if you're a sitter open guy, if you're an eyes closed guy, figure out which one works for you and then go with it. But those are the two options. Okay, let's quickly do one or two more. What are we left with? Okay, the obvious one is source number 17. Again, I won't read it inside because we don't have time. We're going to end in a minute. The Yosef Ometz points out, of course, you might be wondering how come I took so long to get to this, because maybe because it's so obvious, which is, he says, you got to learn what the words mean. Perish Amilim. Now, I'm not saying, again, if I wish I had more time, I would dwell on this. I think there can be kavana even without understanding every word. Because you understand the basic gist of what you're doing, you feel like you're talking to Hashem, that's already the basic kavana. But there's no question that a more ambitious and a better kavana is to understand the words. Now, some people, it has to do with how well their Hebrew is. And even if you have pretty good Hebrew, some of these are quite poetic allusions and that can be difficult. So spend a little bit of time. It doesn't have to be a huge thing. It could be 5 minutes a day. It could be 20 minutes a week. But find some amount of time. If davening is important to you, presumably you would feel more connected to it if you knew what you were saying. So learn a little bit what the words are. And I'll mention just very briefly at the end, quickly, two more and then we're done. Source number 18 and number 19, the Ramban, the Shabura, talks about this. Now, I'm not talking about the shuckling of the guy who needs a chiropractor because he's about to throw out his back each time, or the guy who like thinks he's going to show everyone how firm he is because he's doing the hula hoop, you know. But in all seriousness, says the Mishnah Berurah, and again, I think it makes sense, for some people, it really can help. Now, some argue, and the Mishnah Berurah brings this down, that the idea of shuckling isn't just that it's like a trigger. Again, it's a subliminal thing, right? But that's, I think, the practical point. It helps us concentrate. Why, I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, but it's like a real, we all know it. But others say it's also a fundamental point, that by you putting your whole body into the davening, that's as if the whole body is talking to Hashem. Last but not least, source number 20, the Gemara Brachos already says, and this is also an obvious point, but I think we should all do more of it, and that is make your davening personal. This is something we spoke about back in December, when I had the first shiur, which is, even though there's a lot of value to the fixed text, and I'm not going to repeat that shiur, it's on YU Torah if anyone wants to listen to the recording, but there's a lot of value to the fixed text, but even then we said, and I'll add it now, you're still supposed to personalize your tefillah. My Shemoneh Esrei should not be like yours, because I have something else that's important to me. You have something different that's important to you. And my Shemoneh Esrei on Monday shouldn't necessarily be the same Shemoneh Esrei I said on Thursday. Because on Monday I had something else I was worried about, and on Thursday I have something different. If my Shemoneh Esreis are all the same, if all of our Shemoneh Esreis are all the same, then one thing's for sure, we're not personalizing our tefillah. Now, it's not a sin not to personalize it, but it's a wasted opportunity. Like, why wouldn't you want to if you could? Plus, if we even that little part that we're personalizing, not only is that meaningful, it makes the whole Shemoneh Esrei better. If you don't believe me, try it and let me know. But I really think it's true. Shalom, everybody.